You know, I have yet to meet a person who says they don't like pie. There's probably somebody out there. There are probably a lot of people out there that don't maybe not care that much for pie, but our next guest says if you don't like pie, you probably haven't tasted a good crust. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us. Lisa Ludwinski with us by phone today. She is the founder of Sister Pie. It's a neighborhood bakery in Detroit, and her first book is out. It's called Sister Pie: The Recipes and Stories of a Big-Hearted Bakery in Detroit. So we're going to be talking with her about the book, the bakery, and her business philosophy. And we're also going to talk about how to make a great pie, and she even has a recipe to share with us. So, why do you like to bake pies? What are your favorite ingredients? What's your favorite pie? Join in the conversation. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Lisa Ludwinski, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
You know, Lisa, you're young. Your shop has only been open for a few years, three maybe, and business is growing and from the sound of it, booming. Why did you decide to write this book at this stage in your career is what I want to know.
Well, I think it's really great to be able to tell a story when it's very fresh. And so I think I originally thought about writing a book during this time because it's been such a formative, creative, interesting, and challenging time to start this business. The shop itself has been open for 3.5 years, but I actually started the business 6 years ago. So there's been quite a lot of history already, and a publisher actually approached me about it. And so the opportunity was there, and I said, why not?
You know, I loved your opening. Well, I like your book, the whole book, but I thought it was such an interesting story about the birth of Sister Pie. Talk about a little about that history.
Sure. I was living in Brooklyn, New York after college. I had originally moved there to pursue theater, but got very distracted by food. And so I dabbled in this and that, and then I was looking to kind of do the next thing, and I knew it was going to be with food, but I wasn't really sure. And I traveled to San Francisco, and I spent some more time back in my home of Michigan and encountered businesses that were making good food but also had kind of like social missions behind them. And I think that was really inspiring to me. And I just wanted to create a good place to work based on both my experience of working at different places but also just kind of with a hopeful mind.
Yeah, I like that concept. It's called triple bottom line.
Yeah.
And explain that and talk about how you bring that into your work.
Sure. So triple bottom line is traditionally meant to talk about not having just one bottom line, of course, the profit, but to have three. So the other two generally are people. Some businesses will say employees, but we like to say people because we're thinking about our employees, about our customers, about our neighbors, about the vendors that we work with, and then the planet. So, food businesses generate a lot of waste. What can we do to kind of curb that a little bit or get creative? And so then the third one, of course, is profit. And so to do any of these things, we still need money, and we still need the business to run and be sustainable. So all three are pretty equally important. I think we've spent the most time in our business so far on the people element, because they're all right in front of us every day, and it
Sure.
feels like the good thing to focus on first. And so for us, it's about, challenging ourselves to think of how we can make it a good place to work, specifically in setting expectations for employees, having really good systems for employees, and being receptive to their feedback and giving them lots of opportunities to give that feedback on top of, trying to figure out like the best benefits plan and an hourly rate and all that stuff. And then we're also really trying to work with our customers and our neighbors to make Sister Pie accessible to them, whether that's through a neighborhood discount or creating flavors that they ask for, things like that. It's just, every decision that you make in your business, it has to do with more than just the money. I think that's how I like to look at it.
You know, I like that photo. You've got a photo on early in the book of a sign that you have posted at Sister Pie. It's the a list that could be, I think, for the most part, applied to all of us.
Yes.
Do you remember offhand?
I do. We're actually making that list into a T-shirt.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
So, it's I know it's eat and sleep are the two first ones. Third one was make pie.
Be kind, kind of being the ultimate one at the bottom. I think we try to cultivate a workplace that is open and friendly, and we aren't afraid of talking about, you know, what's going on with us, and kind of sharing with each other so that it doesn't feel like a scary place, and that the having a conversation with your boss doesn't, as much as possible, doesn't seem like a thing you dread.
And I loved right in the middle, somewhere in the middle of that list was take a little dance break or something like that.
Yep.
And you actually used dance breaks to raise some money when you were getting the place going.
So back when we were building out the bakery, we did a 24-hour dance-a-thon, an Indiegogo campaign. We raised over $26,000, and I danced for 24 hours straight, so it was pretty incredible.
I loved that. Well, you know, seasonal, I know, is important to you and important to your baking. What does that bring to a pie or anything else you make?
I think that... the pie is made with a lot of love, and we make everything by hand, you know, specifically our crusts. We make the dough by hand. We roll them out by hand, and I think happy employees create delicious-tasting pie, especially when their hands are, you know, touching it. And so I think that is a big part of it for us, and then we also are really committed to kind of honoring the local seasons of Michigan. So all of the pies that we make are made only with fruits that are, you know, in season. So, for example, right now we have an apple pie, but we wouldn't have that same apple pie in April. And so kind of choosing to work with the seasons not only makes pie more delicious because the fruit is, you know, just when it's supposed to be used, but also it allows us to work with local farmers and kind of support their economy. And that, I think, helps a lot.
Well, we can take some calls here. Marty in Douglas County, what's on your mind?
Hi, good afternoon. Actually, Larry, I am not much of a pie fan, I must say, but National Public Radio a couple years ago did a really funny story about something called Atlantic Beach Pie, and I actually make it now. It's just, it could not be easier. It's graham cracker crust, sweetened condensed milk, four egg yolks, lemon juice. You bake it for exactly 17 minutes. While it's cooling, whip up some cream, goober that on top of it, and then the thing that really sets it apart, you take some kosher salt and sprinkle it on the whipped cream, and it's delightful. Everybody loves it. So I do have one pie that, in fact, has won my heart.
Atlantic Beach Pie.
Yeah.
You know, I bet
I've heard of that one. I've never tried it.
Oh, well, if you Googled Atlantic Beach Pie, I bet it pops up. Dave Potratz will probably do that at some point, maybe during our news break, and we'll find that out. Well, that sounds like one that could be done almost any season of the of the year. And graham crackers, I don't know that you had any graham cracker. I was trying to remember if you had any graham cracker type crusts in your pies that you
have? We don't. We actually use all butter crust for all of the pies. We have one pie that is a malted lime pie that is supposed to kind of be our version of a key lime pie. So instead of having a graham cracker crust, we have our regular all butter flaky crust, but then we make like a little graham crumb topping that goes on top of the pie. So you still have that delicious graham flavor and texture, but you also have that delicious all-butter crust flavor and texture.
Well, the pie maven of Wisconsin Public Radio is Jill Nadeau, my producer, our producer for the show. And in honor and in anticipation of your arrival on our show, She baked two pies from your book.
That's so cool.
Cranberry crumble, and I had wanted her to make the salted maple. And, of course, maple syrup, we're a good cereal, you know, we're a big maple syrup state, like I imagine Michigan is as well.
Yeah.
And we are the cranberry state. And with we produce more cranberries than any other state in the nation.
Oh.
And it's cranberry season right now. So she made the cranberry crumble and the salted maple and brought both of them in today. And I had large pieces of both, and they were both delicious.
Oh, that sounds so good. The cranberry crumble is my favorite pie in the whole book.
It is? I can see why.
Yeah.
Talk about it for a minute.
Sure. So I really like it because I'm definitely a fruit pie person. I like the other pies that have creamy fillings, but fruit pie is what I like really swoon for. And I love a tart fruit pie. Contrast in flavor that you can get from the crust to the filling to the whipped cream that you might put on top. And cranberries, you know, are super tart. And so I just love the bite that you get from that. And then that crumble topping kind of adds like a nice sweetness and texture to it.
It is wonderful. And I can really imagine that cranberry crumble at Thanksgiving time.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like cranberry sauce in a pie.
Yeah, but it's better. It's not too sweet and it's not too tart. It's got a kind of right in the middle.
Why do you think so?
I am here. I've got salivating a little bit just as I talk with with you about it. And I really enjoyed the salted maple, but I don't know. I might have liked the cranberry crumble even a little better. But the salted maple is nice because there's cup of maple syrup or thereabouts in that recipe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It's a lot of maple syrup, but you know what? We use a lot of maple syrup in this state because we're kind of a maple syrup state. So
right. And it's, you know, in Michigan too, like the person that we get our maple syrup from, it's like he's constantly, you know, producing it, and so we're buying it from him, you know, 10 gallons at a time. So I think it's a good way to support his farm and really have that pride in that Midwestern maple syrup.
Lisa Ledwinski, our guest today, she is the founder of Sister Pie. It's a neighborhood bakery in Detroit. Love to have Sister Pie located right here in my own little city of Madison as well. She's the author of Sister Pie and will be with us right up until 12:30 today. So if you got some pie questions or experiences, give us a call. We'll be back right after the news. Things seem to be a little divisive these days, what with the elections coming up next week. But I think there's one thing that most of us can be in favor of, and that's a good piece of pie. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network, talking with baker and entrepreneur Lisa Ledwinski. She's the founder of Sister Pie. That's the name of her neighborhood bakery in Detroit. Her new book is titled Sister Pie: The Recipes and Stories of a Big-Hearted Bakery in Detroit. Love to hear from you. What does pie mean to you and your family? Do you have problems making pie? Give us a call. Love to hear from you. The number's 1-800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Lisa, we have Jill and Racine up with who's been waiting a bit, so let's just go there. Jill, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry and Lisa.
Yeah, hi.
I have a pecan date pie crust. It's 1.5 cups pitted dates, 1.5 cups chopped pecans, 1/4 teaspoon sea salt, and 2 teaspoons coconut oil. I imagine you can use a different kind of oil if you want to. The only thing you have to remember is to soak the dates, and you mix those, and you have a pie crust.
Wow.
Wow. That's
you just press it into the pan?
Yes, and you press it into the pan, and there's all kinds of different ingredients you can put in there.
What have you done in the past?
Well, I like the pumpkin pie.
Mm.
There's the chocolate pie.
Oh. with this crust, you're saying now?
Yes, with the same crust. There's a sweet potato pie with the same crust.
Well,
a custard pie with the same crust. A pumpkin, pecan pumpkin custard pie with the same crust.
Well,
sounds like you could put anything in there.
It sounds like pretty much you could put anything in there. And you don't stray, though, Lisa, from your crust.
Not really. I think we might eventually, you know, but I think I wanted to perfect it, and I wanted to make sure that my staff could spend all of their time making good crust. So I didn't want us to get too distracted by other crusts, and I think we have a pretty good crust as a result.
So, Jill, you know what's going to happen. A lot of people are going to go to our website, WPR website, and go to the Larry Mueller Show probably and listen back again to hear the ingredients for that recipe. So thanks a lot for sharing it. Appreciate it very much. And I want to turn to pie crust for just a minute, because making a pie crust, it's sort of the most intimidating part of making a pie, if you ask me. What's the key to a good crust?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. For one, good butter. So we use an unsalted European-style butter, which has a higher butter fat percentage than traditional American-style butters. So that automatically creates a more flavorful crust. So that's key. We use Pluger butter that you can find at a lot of grocery stores these days. Any butter that is labeled European-style should be able to deliver that flavor promise. And then beyond that, I think just practice. I think there's all sorts of tips, and we have them in the book about keeping your ingredients cold and this and that, working fast. But it's really about practice, because it's through gaining the confidence of doing something over and over again that you'll really begin to develop those instincts and be able to make a really good crust.
You know, Rich in Wanakee has a question for you. You mentioned butter. Rich, what do you got for us?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I recently kind of fell in love with pie making a couple of years ago and read an interesting book by Kate McDermott, I believe her name is, and she turned me on to the idea of using leaf lard in my pie crust, and that I've had really good results with that, and I was just wondering if you've had any experience with any kind of lard products. And then I would also like to just say to your comment about the practice, like especially getting the water right and the moisture right. I was an absolute tire fire when I started making my own pie crust. And the practice thing, it's just something you develop over time, and it is just one of the greatest hobbies I've come to really enjoy. So I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer. Thanks.
You're going to like this book, Rich. I'm pretty sure of that, given your love for making pies. Lisa, comment?
Yeah, I've never actually used lard in my pie crusts. I think I just love the flavor of butter so much that I haven't been tempted to stray away, but also vegetarians typically wouldn't eat a crust made with lard, so for us, we'd kind of have to have, like, special pies that were made with lard. So maybe it's something that we would explore. The butcher shop just opened next door to us, so maybe we would take some of their lard and make some pie. That could be fun.
Boy, it sounds like you've got a great neighborhood there. Your shop,
yeah.
The butcher shop's next door. I think you even mentioned some of the other shops in your neighborhood that are nearby.
Yeah, we have a great neighborhood, lots of different business folks, and I live right down the street with my dog.
Yeah, that's great.
It's pretty idyllic.
Chris and Slinger, we'll go to you.
Hi, I'm going to speak up on. I was wondering about quince. Do you ever cook with quince? With apple pie?
Do you use quince in your, maybe in your apple pies? Lisa?
Oh, yeah, I've used quince before. I believe I've made a quince pie. It's been a while, but we actually struggle to get quince in Michigan. So I don't know if you can get them easily in Wisconsin. Sounds like you can.
Yeah. Well, I see quince in, I see it in our grocery stores.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I haven't been able to track it down here, which is unfortunate because I love quince.
Yeah. So you haven't used it yet, but you may sometime down the road. There you go,
okay.
Chris. Thank you very much for calling. What about apple pies? We're right at the, fresh apples right now here in Wisconsin. I'm sure you must have apples right now. So you're probably baking apple pies right now.
That's true.
Yeah. So what's the secret on an apple pie?
Huh. I guess I don't know if there's a secret. There's lots of different things, but I like to use apples that I like to eat. That's one thing. I try to just like use what's available, but also something that I would eat out of hand is typically what I'm going for, so that I don't have to sweeten it in the crust too much, which is always something that I'm thinking about when I'm making my fruit pies, like to use minimal sweetener so that you can really taste the delicious, vibrant flavor of the fruit itself. So that's something that I always think about with apple pie. We love to incorporate an element of cheese into our apple pies. And I'm sure that in Wisconsin you wouldn't have a problem with that.
No.
We have an apple cheddar rye where we put cheddar in the crust. We have a Gouda pie where we put Gouda in the crust. And so we add this like slightly savory element, which really...
Oh, we lost you there for a second, Lisa. Are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm here. I was just saying that the cheese is a great balance with the apples.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't argue with you about that. And somebody else mentioned coconut earlier, or maybe you did, and you're sharing your recipe for sweet potato coconut pie with us.
Mm.
This is kind of sweet potato harvest season, too, just kind of finishing up. And the sweet potatoes and the coconut, it sounds like a great combination of flavors. Tell us about that recipe.
Yeah, so, with every recipe we make, we just like to add an element that makes it a little bit more unique than a traditional pie. So the sweet potato coconut pie is pretty much like a traditional sweet potato pie. We take sweet potatoes grown in Michigan, we roast them and puree them, and then we mix them with, instead of cream, we mix them with some coconut milk. There's a little bit of cream in there still. And then there's coconut milk, just some nice light spices, eggs, sugar, and then we top it with some toasted coconut flakes. So it just has kind of a hint of coconut and a really nice textural addition on top. And it just kind of takes the pie to another level.
Yeah, I really like the look of it, too. And the recipe's on our website, so as you listen in, you go to WPR.org/Larry. And then click on the show called Pie for All. And at the bottom of the show description, you'll see a link to that recipe. So that's another one. I might have to talk with Jill, our pie maven, about preparing. she did a wonderful job. You would have been proud of her, Lisa. I wish you were here to sample a cranberry crumble, and her salted maple are both really, really good pies. And she's going to make...
I wish I could see a picture.
She's going to, yeah. I don't know if she took a picture. She'll email you a picture.
Oh, great.
A picture of the pie, because it looked just absolutely gorgeous, and it tasted as well. And, sometimes... with a cookbook, you might find 10 recipes, or you might find just one. Well, she just tried. The first two she tried were both keepers out of your book. So looking forward to the sweet potato coconut pie, and hopefully some of the other ones. You said your favorite was the cranberry crumble?
Yeah, that's my number one favorite. That was my favorite in the fall and winter, and then my favorite in the spring is probably the rhubarb rosemary streusel.
Oh.
Like I said, I love tart pies.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, Mitch in Green Bay has something for us. Hi, Mitch.
Hi. About when I was in grade school, so over 60 years ago, I learned how to make a pie. One of our neighbors taught me how to make pies. And we used her then, the brand new thing to have was a freezer in the refrigerator, and we would freeze the tools and the bowl. And then she would also cut up the butter into little strips and then put that in there for about a half an hour. And then she would then put them all together, blend them together with the dough cutter.
Pastry blender?
Dough cutter, yeah.
Yeah, and then she had a, then we would, once we would make a ball of it, we would make the ball for the, of the pastry dough, then they went back in the freezer for about a half hour, 45 minutes, and then she rolled them out.
Wow. What do you think of that process, Lisa?
Yeah, that sounds great. Using the fridge and the freezer is to your advantage with pie making, absolutely.
Why?
Because you don't want the butter to melt. You don't want the butter to get too warm and become kind of homogenous with the other ingredients, because when you have these little bits of butter that stay kind of within their fat structure, once they hit a hot oven, they will burst, and that's how a flaky pocket in dough is created. And so the more of those little bits of butter that kind of remain intact, the better tasting and the flakier your crust will be. So every effort you can make to keep the ingredients cold is a good one.
So that's probably 60 years ago that was being used, and still being used today then to good effect from the sound of it, Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
Mitch, thanks for sharing that. Appreciate it. Cold is very important, for sure. Well, you can join in 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. And here's John in Middleton just joining us now. Let's go there. John, hello.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, I heard you guys talk about which are your favorite pies. And I'm just wondering, in the shop, which pies do the best with the customers and which ones seem to sell the best?
I mean, I think it's a little hard to say because we're changing the flavors so often because of the season. And so we always have four pies available. And right now it's the salted maple, which is actually the one pie that we have year-round because we can get that maple syrup year-round. We have the sweet potato coconut that we talked about. We have a coffee chess pie. And last but not least, we have the apple sage gouda. And so I think, like, it just sort of depends on the day. I think people come to Sister Pie for different flavors. They like something that's a little bit unique. You know, we certainly have people who come asking for something, you know, out of season. And then once they get to know us a little bit, they know to come kind of just, like, ready to try anything new.
And you make pies, but you also make cookies.
Yes. We make cookies. We make scones, muffins. We make savory hand pies. We even have salads.
And, yeah, and you have sort of a breakfast and lunch operation going there at the same time, don't you?
Yeah, it's not like a sit-down place like that where we, like, are cooking eggs, but we try to have some savory options available for customers so that there can be a little bit of balance to their meal, and they can maybe, you know, come in, have a salad, have a slice of pie for dessert, and it's a great time had by all.
Yeah, that sounds...
It's my ideal meal.
What's your website, by the way?
It's sisterpie.com, and we're also on Instagram at Sister Pie Detroit.
Sister Pie Detroit on Instagram, sisterpie.com online. Todd in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Todd.
Hi there. My grandmother used to make pie out of service berries or June berries.
Yep.
I had a grove of these, and I wonder if it's still done.
Yep.
Yeah.
It
I
is.
Think so. So service berries are also like mulberries, right?
No, they're more like blueberries. They're small,
Sometimes
your pinky nail. It's a tree and tree or a shrub native to our part of the world.
Amalanker.
I'm a horticulturist.
Oh, like a Saskatoon.
Amalanker. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So Saskatoons, they're very popular in Saskatchewan. Well, all parts, many parts of Canada, but they grow well here, too.
Wow. Well, I've never made pie with them, but I would love to. Seems like you would need a lot of them for one pie.
Yeah, but there's a lot of them out there.
All right. Well, someone can send me some straight from Wisconsin. I'll experiment.
Todd, thanks. Service berry pies, you bet. Sherry in Elkhorn.
Hi. I wonder if your guest has ever tried making a gluten-free crust, and if so, what flour works the best?
Gluten-free crust.
I have tried making a gluten-free crust in the past. I haven't found one that I like. We make gluten-free cookies, we make gluten-free brownies, and we like to use buckwheat flour for that. Buckwheat flour has a strong flavor, so it's good to insert when you're looking for that kind of added flavor. But with crust, I think I've heard people using mixes of rice flour, tapioca flour, but I don't have a recipe myself. I think that there are plenty of all-purpose gluten-free flours on the market now that could be good for experimentation. But also, one of the earlier callers had mentioned that date pecan crust, and that would be gluten-free.
It would be. Yeah, absolutely. So, Sherry, go back and listen to the early part of the show, because that sounded like a really good crust to me as well. You can go online to our website, WPR.org/Larry, and look up today's show. It'll be up right after the show's over, as a matter of fact, and you'll get that recipe. You know, Jill Nadeau, our pie maven, did have a question for you, or a comment for you. You talked about finding the hot spots in an oven, which I thought, oh, that's a good idea. You take a pan and you kind of spread sugar out over it, right?
Yep. Spread sugar out over it, and then you would put that in the oven, maybe at 350 degrees, and kind of see monitor it and see where the sugar starts to melt first, or maybe it starts to darken a little bit, and you'll just be able to tell from how the sugar reacts, as long as you're watching it, you know, where your oven is hottest. So then you know when you're making a batch of cookies or baking a pie, kind of what spot in the oven you need to make sure your pie rotates in and out of, so that it doesn't, you know, burn or that it gets enough heat.
Jill says she has used flour instead of sugar because the flour doesn't melt like the sugar and make a messy pan.
Well, I would do it on parchment paper.
Ah, do it on parchment paper.
Yeah, so I think flour or sugar works.
All right, there you go. Sherry, go back and listen to the show again and get that. I didn't get the ingredients all written down myself, so I'm going to have to go back and listen to it myself. Ned in Florence, your turn.
Hello. Yeah, your talk is reminding me of what my uncle used to say. He says, apple pie without cheese is like a kiss without a squeeze.
That.
I think I've heard that one before.
Yeah, well, that is well said, and I see. What was you use brie cheese in one of your pie recipes? If I'm not mistaken, with apples,
we use Gouda. We use cheddar.
Gouda and cheddar.
Gouda.
Well, how do we get your book?
Well, you can visit sisterpie.com/cookbook, and we have a lot of information there. You can also find it at most booksellers these days.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book, and as I said, I love the story in the beginning, and I also, you've got a lot of great tips before we actually get into the recipes for all the pies. It's certainly a lot of fun. I hope, it's just kind of just out, isn't it? Is it selling very well?
I'm sorry, we got a little feedback from the bakery. The phone was on upstairs at the bakery, so we were hearing a little bit of that. But what was your question?
How's the book sale going?
Oh, they're going great. It's been such a wonderful thing to have sold in the shop. We've actually sold hundreds in the shop alone, so it's been a great extra source of income for us, and I think across the country it's selling well too.
Lisa, fun talking with you today. Man, next time I'm in Detroit, I am going to look you up and look up Sister Pie. Thank you so much.
Please do. Thank you.
Lisa Ledwinski, our guest today. She is has her neighborhood bakery. It's called Sister Pie Bakery in Detroit. Hope you have a chance, if you're in Detroit, take a visit over there. But you can also bring Lisa right to your own home. A copy of her book is called Sister Pie, subtitle, The Recipes and Stories of a Big-Hearted Bakery in Detroit. Really fun talking with Lisa Ludwinski. Maybe we'll get her back and we'll do this all over again. Love to talk with her. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll take a look at growing herbs. We're going to spend 90 minutes on growing herbs. So I hope you can join us for that. It's 11 tomorrow and then 6 a.m. on Saturday, or, of course, online at any time. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.